Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeed.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, April 24th, 2011, and this is show number 309. Well, now that I have my MacBook Pro smoking along at full speed, it's time to put an appropriate decal on it. On my old MacBook Pro, I put a decal of an old-fashioned microphone. I really kind of like the statement it made, you know? It told you what I was about when you looked at it, made it stand out in a crowd, and yet didn't damage the device in any way, so resale value was retained. I started noodling on a different option, and I thought maybe it would be fun to have the mic and a decal of the famous Podfeet themselves. I immediately enlisted the help of the artist who created the entire look and feel of the Podfeet.com website. That's Ryan Sakamoto of RyanSakamoto.com. I thought of him not only for his artistic talent, but also because he sent Steve and I some modified Apple stickers a few years ago. Now, you know how obsessive Steve and I are about our cars, right? I mean, all the waxing and cleaning and everything. We never put anything on our cars. You know, when our kids were little and they won Student of the Month and they come home with those stickers, we'd go, yeah, that's really cute. Put it in the window of the house or something if you want. Nothing went on our cars. But we are both sporting Ryan's skull and crossbones versions of the Apple logo right now. So anyway, I wrote to Ryan asking whether he could make me a Podfeet decal. He wrote to me to tell me that he had sold his decal making machine, but as luck would have it, he happened to have made a black Podfeet decal before he'd sold the machine. He agreed to mail me the decals. Now, the only problem with Ryan is that he never charges me for anything, and this is his business. I told him he had to charge me this time, but instead he said this. Hey, Allison, you know I can't take your money, but here's the deal. In iTunes, there's a button called Japan Earthquake and Tsunami Relief Donate Here button. Donate some money, and I'll mail the decals up to you. Deal or no deal? Well, what could I do? Of course, I followed his instructions, and I donated some more money to the Japan Relief Fund. I can't leave it at that, though. I have to tell you to go over to RyanSakamoto.com and take a look at the wonderful artwork he does have for sale. He's a phenomenal photographer. He sells his prints. And if you're on Oahu in Hawaii, you can hire him to photograph events. I love to go over to his site, and I just spend time looking at the gorgeous family photographs and weddings he's taken pictures of. Truly amazing. Anyway, Steve, Ryan, and I started an email string back and forth as I used an image editor to try out different options on how to arrange the decals. In the end, I'm really happy with what we ended up with. You can see a picture of it in the show notes.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions. Dumb questions.
How do I? What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
This week, Gaby Weissman sent in a dumb question. For some reason, he felt the need to apologize for sending in too many of them to us. This is his third dumb question, but evidently he hasn't figured out that I love dumb questions. I especially love them when they're easy to answer. The only dumb questions I don't like are the ones that are too hard to answer. Let's get into Gaby's dumb question. I found this out the hard way. I booked a flight and entered the details into TripIt.com. I then exported the flight details into iCal. So far, so good. I then flew from Eastern Standard Time to Mountain Standard Time. I then proceeded to miss my 1:30 p.m. flight, Mountain Standard Time, by arriving at the airport late because iCal told me the flight was at 3:30, which is only correct if you consider that 1:30 Mountain Time is 3:30 Mountain Standard Time. Looking at this, I noticed that iCal does this for all of my flights. This is not what I want. Seems to me the correct display would show the local time as that is the time I'm looking at when I am in said location. So if I have an 8 a.m. meeting in L.A., I don't want to have to enter 11 p.m. when I make an appointment while in New York City. I think he meant 11 a.m. when he said that, though. What is the correct solution to this? I am reading about turning on time zone support, but to be frank, I don't get what it does yet, and I don't want to mess up my iCal calendar. As an aside, I never switch time zones on my MacBook, but my iPhone obviously knows where I am, and that is my primary device for calendaring meetings. This mistake costs many hours and dollars, and I would like to try to not repeat it and not do the math in my head, GMT minus X. Thanks so much. As always, love the show and all your hard work. Thanks for letting us know how we can watch the live show, not live. Who knew? I can never really make Sundays, but on the on-demand model usually works for us podcast types. I guess one reason we listen to podcasts in the first place. Time shifting, like iCal. Well, thank you first for all the kind words, Gaby. I'm glad you like the show, and I can't believe it never occurred to me to tell people how to watch the Delayed Live show. Well, anyway, my first impression of this problem was that it's got to be a bug. My final impression is that Apple are idiots. Let me explain the feature that is helping you here. You almost got to it yourself, but let me walk through it so no one else ever falls into this trap. To restate the problem very simply, when you change time zones, your iPhone knows the new time, but the calendar does not adjust the time of events in iCal. Again, this sure sounds like a bug. I checked into the time zone support on the iPhone, and I understand what they did, even though it's idiotic. The default setting on an iPhone is to have time zone support on. One might incorrectly assume that with it on, you'd have a phone that understands that if you've changed time zones, it should fix that. But you'd be wrong. It means the exact opposite. I went into settings on the iPhone, clicked on mail, contacts, and calendars, then selected time zone support. Time zone support, as I said, was defaulted to on, and my time zone was set to Los Angeles. In the print under that, it says time zone support always shows event dates and times in the time zones selected for calendars. Below that, it says when off, events will display according to the time zone of your current location. Okay, so the brainiacs at Apple decided it was a good idea to make it where your iPhone would know where it was, but would refuse to tell your calendars. Could someone please tell me a single scenario where someone would actually want that? I absolutely can't imagine. So, Gaby, you have two choices here. You can manually change the time zone to the city you're in when traveling, and then your calendars will make sense, or just shut the stupid time zone support off so you never have to worry about it again. I'm really sorry this happened to you, but I'm really glad you wrote to us now about it so we all can learn from your experience. I'm shutting time zone support off right now. This weekend, Steve and I went to visit Steve's parents, and his mom had a nice long list of computer questions for me. Now I know you're all groaning in sympathy at that, but it's not annoying at all. Her questions are great. She wanted to know how to scan in photos or what to do with some aliases on her desktop and asked me, what the heck is RSS anyway? She and I sat down for about an hour and had an absolute blast. When I showed her that she could subscribe in Apple Mail to the RSS feed for her granddaughter-in-law's blog, she thought she'd died and gone to heaven. The steps weren't exactly intuitive for her, though, so she started to scribble out some notes on a pad of paper. I told her not to bother. Popped open screen steps on my Mac, took some screenshots, annotated them with arrows and boxes, and then added some text for each image to give it some context to remind her why she was doing each step. I exported it to a PDF, dropped it into the mail to her, and she had her permanent instructions on how to subscribe to blogs. So in maybe 10 minutes, I was able to create fabulous, professional-looking documentation that made her happy. I thought maybe you have friends or family, or maybe even yourself, who'd like to know how to subscribe to RSS feeds in Apple Mail, so I clicked on the Export to Blog button, uploaded it to podfeed.com, and I added it to my tutorials section. Easy peasy. You can look this smart too for only $40 for the standard version of Screen Steps or $80 for the pro version. Give their free trial a spin to make sure you love it as much as I do by going to screensteps.com. Well, my buddy Ron was over Friday night, and he brought with him a really cool new little toy. It's a very, very small portable boom mic for his iPhone. I put an Amazon link in the show notes to the Asden ECZ990 Super Cardioid Zoom Camcorder Microphone, but the photo they had of it was about the worst I'd ever seen, so I took my own shot using my Lightbox. You know, any excuse to go play with that, right? Anyway, he started telling me about it, and I figured the best way to let you know how it sounds was to actually do a quick interview with the Asden mic hooked up to his iPhone. At the end, Steve decides to start getting entertaining playing with the pizza guy, so it's not my fault. Take it up with him, okay? All right, Ron, we're doing a little test recording here with, what's the name of the manufacturer of the microphone again?
It's the Asden, the EC990.
All right, is that an expensive mic?
That's about $45, not too bad.
So where do you buy the Asden?
I did it online through Amazon, of course.
Did you use my affiliate link?
I absolutely did. I'm sure you got a nickel for it.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about. So did the windscreen come with it?
Windscreen comes with it. No battery, though.
Okay, and now we've also got an adapter here that takes you from the, 3/8 inch jack that then jacks it into the special four-ring jack that the iPhone needs, right?
Absolutely. So it does the conversion, and it also has impedance matching to make sure the levels are right.
And then in addition to that, it's got another jack here. What's that for?
That's for an external monitor so that you can plug in headphones or a speaker.
So you could actually be able to listen to what you're recording to see if you're getting a good recording?
Actually not. What it does, because most of the applications don't allow you to do it simultaneously, but after you've done it, you don't have to then unjack everything and put something else in. You could play it back through the headphones.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay, that's pretty cool. So how much was that adapter kit to go with it?
It was about $23 plus a couple of bucks for shipping and handling.
So you're out well under $100 for an external mic, and what was the use case you needed it for?
I like to go to conferences, and I'm not usually sitting right near the front, so I'm a couple rows back, and so I'd like to point it at the speaker and be able to screen out some of the other noise and get a little bit of gain.
All right, cool. Have you been able to test it yet?
This is our first real test.
All right.
The maiden voyage.
The maiden voyage. Hey, you stole my line. So most of my listeners probably don't know where to find you. I think probably the best place is on Flickr, wouldn't you say?
I would say so. Flickr.com. 21st century.
Ah, 21st century. That's 21st century.
That's just, you got to spell it out with a dash in the middle.
Oh, okay. So 21st century.
Uh-oh.
All right. I have a tough time doing interviews with this guy around.
All right. We'll sign off so that we can eat.
I warned you about Steve goofing around with the pizza guy at the end, right? Anyway, I found this a very intriguing device. The chat room is a little annoyed that you have to use an adapter, and the adapter was a little bit on the clunky side, but I thought the audio was pretty good, and it's very light. And I have found that using the iPhone for interviews works really well, but I don't find myself willing to stick a phone in somebody's face as much as I think I would with this little tiny wand. I mean, it's literally just a little bit bigger than the AA battery that goes into it. So it was pretty light. It was pretty easy. I think it could help out. It could also help get rid of maybe the crazy bird noises from the interview I had with Shai last week. Maybe I wouldn't have had that problem. And those raging seagulls from the interview with Tom Merritt. Maybe it would have worked a little bit better. Maybe isolated the sound, but it still isn't a lot of heavy equipment. It was very, very small and weighs practically nothing. Now, Ron mentioned that adapter he bought that allowed him to use the iPhone because it has that mutant four-ring connector, and he sent me the link to kvconnections.com where he bought the iPhone adapter. So don't forget to buy that, too, if you do want to use this with your iPhone. It works directly with a camcorder without it, though. I should mention that the prices are higher than Ron's recollection. The adapter was $25, while the mic itself through Amazon was $55, but you're still out the door for well under $100. Finally, I put a direct link to Ron's Flickr account in the show notes so that you could see his photos. He's quite a good photographer. Well, let's say you're writing a review of the Asden EC990 Supercardioid Zoom Camcorder Microphone. You know you're going to want to write Asden EC990 Supercardioid Zoom Camcorder Microphone a whole bunch of times, but dang, that's a lot to type. Did you know that if you had Text Expander, if you typed it out just once, you could simply select that giant glob of text, hold down Option T, and Text Expander would open up and offer to assign an abbreviation for it. I did just that, put in a Z, I put in A, Z, semicolon, and from then on I could type Asden EC990 Supercardioid Zoom Camcorder Microphone with 3 characters instead of 54. Now that kind of savings really adds up, makes you much more efficient, makes your writing clearer because you don't get lazy and skip writing things, and I'm no doctor, but it's got to help with the repetitive stress on your hands and wrists, wouldn't you think? Head on over to smilesoftware.com and buy yourself a copy of Text Expander for only $35. They even have a 90-day money-back guarantee, so that proves they're sure you're going to find it's worth every single penny. Sometimes you find a piece of software that captures your imagination, and every year or two when they bring out a new version, you just can't resist it. There are not many applications I would actually put in this category, just the jewels that get this honor. One of these rare applications is Acorn from FlyingMeat.com. I first reviewed Acorn in 2007, thanks to Gus from Flying Meat, and again in 2009 when they came out with version 2. Now in 2011, Gus has graciously let me review Acorn 3. Wait a minute, what am I doing here? I forgot to tell you what problem needs to be solved. Okay, how about you're a normal person who doesn't have to do all those kind of fancy-pantsy stuff that Photoshop has built into it, and you don't want to drop $650 on Photoshop, or maybe you don't even want to drop $90 on Photoshop Elements. I'm not dissing those products, but, you know, they are pretty steep if you don't use them a lot. But a great number of us still want to do a little bit of image creation, a little bit of image editing, you know, messing around. I'm not talking about the kind of stuff you can do in iPhoto or Aperture, not red eye reduction and levels and all that kind of stuff, but maybe adding a drop shadow or creating some original artwork from scratch, or maybe doing some more advanced editing of an image to plop into a blog. Well, I've been using Pixelmator for the last 6 months, so my opinion on Acorn 3 will probably be more from that perspective than comparing Acorn 3 to Acorn 2. A few weeks ago, I was working on some images for a website I'm designing for my dear friends Ileana and Mike. They're creating a line of products for a site they're calling Sea Suns, and one of the products is greeting cards made from artwork created by Ileana's father. These are beautiful cards created by a real artist using the artwork from the father. Now, I know I don't have a right brain at all, so I couldn't have created this artwork of the card itself at all. But looking at them, the artwork looked very flat when plopped onto a white background. I thought perhaps a nice drop shadow set them off the page, and that would make them look more like real physical cards. Back before I got Acorn 3, I opened Pixelmator, and for the life of me, I could not figure out an automatic way to make a drop shadow. I fought with it for a long time. I searched their practically useless help files, too. The help files for Pixelmator tell you what you can do, but they never tell you how to do it. They refer to brushes and different kind of controls, but they don't show you what the button looks like to find it. They don't have any kind of step-by-step instructions of what buttons to push. In contrast, Acorn 3 has great help files that tell you what to do, and better yet, most of the time I'd found that I didn't even need help as often because the options were much more obvious than in Pixelmator. One of the biggest new features of Acorn 3 is layer styles. With layer styles, you can add bevels, glows, comic patterns, Gaussian blurs, and about 20 other styles, plus my beloved drop shadow. The cool part about layer styles in Acorn 3 is that this is a non-destructive process. What I mean by that is you can add a bevel, then a blur, then a drop shadow. Later on, you decide, boy, I don't really want that original bevel anymore. You simply uncheck the box in the layer styles menu for the bevel, and it's gone while it still has the blur and the drop shadow you added after it. Very, very cool. This lets you feel free to do more experimenting than you normally would. So anyway, let's describe the process here. I've got this flat greeting card, and I want to add a drop shadow. The image opens in Acorn with white all around the image within the same layer as the card. Well, to get a drop shadow on the card, I need to remove that card from the white background or erase the white background. Enter Instant Alpha. Now, I'd never heard of this concept before watching the great Don McAllister of Screencast Online demonstrating a feature in Keynote of all places. They have Instant Alpha in there. The idea is that with the Instant Alpha brush, you can slowly increase how much of a color is selected from a screen. Now, by color here, I guess I mean like range of hue, I guess it would be called. So like if you have a blue sky, it's not all exactly the same color of blue, but as you drag the Instant Alpha brush, it selects more and more of the range of available blue. Hope I didn't make that too confusing. Anyway, both Pixelmator and Acorn have an Instant Alpha brush, but the one on Pixelmator always grabbed more of the color than I wanted. It wouldn't just take the sky, but say it would immediately grab the blue in someone's shirt or eyes as well. Acorn was much more delicate and accurate in my experiments. So let's jump back to my card example. Using the Instant Alpha brush, by moving very, very carefully, I was able to easily get Acorn to select the background white, but none of the white of the card. If I just kind of jammed and slid real quickly, it would grab white all over the place. I clicked delete, and my background white was gone. Next, I right-clicked on the layer, chose Layer Styles, and from the menu, I chose Drop Shadow. From there, I could define the XY offset of my shadow, the opacity of the shadow, and even add some nice blur to the shadow, along with setting the color. In just 2 seconds, I had the exact shadow I'd searched so valiantly for in Pixelmator and never achieved. There's so many layer styles available in Acorn 3, I won't even begin to try to explain them all to you here, but I'm sure you'll be able to find what you need, because there's just a ton of them. I did find one hinky behavior in Acorn 3. Every once in a while, when I was using a selected tool, it would switch to something else on me. For example, when I was using the Instant Alpha tool, it switched to the Move tool on me one time. Like, I'd done it once, and I'd done it twice. When I went to do it the third time, suddenly I was moving the whole image. The same kind of thing happened when I was working with the Clone tool. It switched to the Rotate Canvas tool, and boy, that scared me. I think this is maybe a little kind of a bug, so they can probably sort that out. I wrote to Gus over at flyingmeat.com, and I expect they'll get right on it. I mentioned that I like the help files much better on Acorn than on Pixelmator, like they're actually useful, but they also have tutorials up there. One of the fun ones I found was how to change the color of something. They show you how to change the color of somebody's hair. I thought I'd have a little more fun, and I took a picture of Tim Robinson from MyMac.com. I had a picture of him when he was on stage at Macworld, and I decided to see how he'd look with green eyes instead of blue. In a few quick steps, I had my masterpiece. I put a link to this tutorial, by the way, in the show notes so you can learn how to do that yourself. Another one of my favorite things to do with photos is to take out wrinkles and whiten teeth. I'm telling you, you do this, you're going to make everybody think you're an amazing photographer because you make them look awesome. Anyway, to take out wrinkles, what you do is you copy someone's face to a new layer, and then you just blur the snot out of that layer with a nice big Gaussian blur. Then you change the opacity of that layer until the wrinkles are believable and the face doesn't look too weird. Then, here's the really good trick to it. You take a small eraser and you erase the blurred layer over the teeth, eyes, eyelashes, any kind of edges you want to show clearly. You'd be amazed at how great someone can look. I won't tell you who I've done it for, but they love my photos. I also like to take someone's teeth, copy them to a new layer, remove the color from that layer, and then brighten it until it's unrealistically white. Then you set the opacity of that layer until the combination of the two looks believable. I took a picture of Jeff Gamet of the Mac Observer and I over at Macworld, and I whitened our teeth and I got rid of my wrinkles. Jeff didn't have any wrinkles. And I'm telling you, we look fantastic now. It was a great picture before, but now we look awesome. Now, I know I'm not telling you exactly how I did this in Acorn and step-by-step instructions, but the important part was it was something I'd learned how to do in Photoshop Elements, and I was able to easily reproduce this over in Acorn. I didn't have to go study a bunch of documentation to figure out how to do it. Now, the only thing I didn't like about Acorn was that when I was messing with the saturation on the teeth that I was trying to whiten, Acorn brought that up in a separate editor window. It was kind of like a preview window. But the problem was I couldn't zoom in to see it very well. So the teeth were very small in the photo, so it's this little tiny area, and I couldn't really see it very well, especially since I was using white on a white background. If they must have it in a separate window, they really should give you some sliders to be able to zoom, or else just let you mess with a live preview of the edits while in the main image window. Now, I've been teasing you for a long time here. I told you this is for people who don't want to spend $650 for Photoshop or $90 for Photoshop Elements, but I didn't tell you how much Acorn is. Acorn 3 is only $30, and it's available in the Mac App Store, which means you can put it on all of your machines. Maybe it's up to 5. I don't know how crazy you are on how many machines you have. I forget, but check your license agreement to be sure. But in any case, it's on all those machines for that same $30 price, just paid once. Now, if you already own an earlier version of Acorn, you can grab the upgrade for only $20 from their website over at flyingmeat.com. I should mention that Acorn is for Mac OS 10.6, which I believe is Snow Leopard. Still not convinced? Then give their free trial a shot before you buy. I am delighted with Acorn 3, and I'm replacing Pixelmator with it as my standard image editor. You know, one last thing, I found out after I'd recorded the review of Acorn that the $30 price is only until the end of April. After that, it goes up to $50, so you better jump on it now if you're interested. I hope you're listening to this before the end of April. I do still think it's worth $50, so if you're listening after the deal is over, don't be disappointed. Oh, and one more last thing. I got an email back from Gus where he said I might be invoking a gesture when I was getting those accidental rotations because he asked, was I using a trackpad? So that's probably what was going on. He said that in the Acorn preferences, you can turn off gestures if you find that problem happens to you.
Hey, Allison and the Civil Castaways, it's me, Will. You remember me, right? Well, I'll forgive you if you don't because I haven't sent anything in quite a while. I do have a good reason, though. I've been busy as a member of a FIRST robotics team, the same organization that Kirshen talked about two chit-chat across the ponds ago. And remember, FIRST is actually the name of the organization, an acronym for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology. As far as I remember, everything Kirshen said was right, but it didn't quite include what I do. Hang on, back up. I need the problem statement, right? Well, FIRST is more an opportunity than a problem to be solved. For middle and high school students, it's an opportunity to build amazingly interesting robots with a group of your peers while learning about working in a team and about engineering. For professional engineers, it can be an opportunity to work with many future engineers and help them learn. Before I talk more about that, I'll explain the FIRST Robotics Competition, which is the highest level competition that FIRST puts on. Each team gets 6 weeks to design, build, test, and program a robot to play a game that FIRST creates. Sometimes these games are based on sports, like soccer, but they always consist of a simple task the robot has to perform, usually with obstacles in the way. Some of these obstacles are other robots. Every round, two alliances of three teams each play against each other. The games always give more points to harder versions of the tasks, like making a soccer goal from farther away or hanging an inner tube on a higher peg. The main game has two main sections. A short, autonomous period where drivers have no control and the robot must perform the task on its own or not at all. And a longer, teleoperated period where drivers take control and continue trying to score points. The last 10 to 15 seconds of teleoperated period are the end game, where the robot can perform a completely separate task for a large amount of points. In the past, the end game has involved robots hanging themselves off a bar or sending a small mini-bot up a pole, racing the other alliance's mini-bots. The game is played over a period of 2 days, and in between matches, teams fix up their robots in case they need fine-tuning or repairs. Because of the alliance system, teams who are on opposing alliances may soon be playing together, or vice versa. This creates an atmosphere where teams help out others, lending tools, materials, and knowledge, and not fearing that they'll give another team an advantage that they won't have. There is, however, one imbalance in this system, and that's the big reason I'm telling you about FIRST. While teams are theoretically equal in resources, for example, there's a limit to the amount of money you can spend, those with many professional mentors perform consistently better than those with few or none. As a member of a team without any regular professional mentors, I'd like to put out a call to the engineering community and encourage you to seek out a robotics team in your area and offer your services. You don't need to commit much. Obviously, you can be more helpful if you can attend more meetings, but teams like ours would much prefer if you can come once a week or even only a couple times a month than not coming at all. So please, if you're able, consider joining a team. I promise it's a lot of fun even just building, let alone the competition itself. Thank you, and thanks, Allison, for this opportunity to get the word out. And, as always, have a great episode. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks, Will. It was so nice to hear from you again, and it's great to hear about FIRST from your perspective in addition to Kirshen's. I remember back in 1978 when I got my first car. My dad's office mate was selling a 1976 yellow Honda Civic. I was so excited. $2,800 for my first car, and she was a beauty. All right, actually, it was ugly as sin, but you know what? She was mine, all mine. Yellow. Really ugly. But I loved her. I wish I could remember who told us about Honda Bob, but I remember this funny guy driving to my apartment to do scheduled maintenance on my car. My boyfriend Steve was driving a 53 Chevy at the time, and when he finally bought himself a new car, you know he picked a Honda. That was all over 30 years ago, and to this day, we wouldn't trust anyone with our cars but Honda Bob. Plus, you can't beat the convenience of having him come to us. If you live in the L.A. or Orange County areas and you drive a Honda or an Acura, give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or send him an email at hdabob@aol.com. H.A. Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, security activity this week was pretty boring, unless you consider updates for iTunes and Adobe products interesting. When I was helping my mother-in-law this weekend, she showed me proudly how she'd followed my instructions on getting rid of Adobe entirely, even though every site with a PDF on it insisted that she needed Adobe Reader. She did have some trouble opening PDFs with Preview, so I walked her through how to open with and choose Preview. And of course, I'm going to have to do a screen steps on that for her, too. There was one interesting security point, though. Last week, I talked about the new iPhone 4.3.2 update, but Gary Beltz called me on the carpet for what I said. Here's what he wrote. Just got done listening to your latest podcast, and you talked about a bunch of security updates for the iOS devices and the Mac in general. You only mentioned the iPad, iPod Touch, and AT&T GSM versions of the iPhone. Apple has also released update 4.2.7 for the Verizon CDMA iPhone. I know it may not have crossed your mind, but with the popularity of this device among Verizon customers like myself, you should try to keep up with these updates as well. Thanks for the great shows. Take care, Gary. Well, thanks very much for sending this along, Gary. I actually had no idea the update for Verizon phones was different. For some reason, I got the idea in my head that they were finally in sync. I knew that when the Verizon phone first came out, they weren't in sync, but I thought they, for some reason, I got it in my head that they were this time. I had heard that Verizon phones got an update too, so I just kind of assumed it was the same one. I didn't forget, you guys. I was just being unthorough in my research. Now, to be fair here, this is not actually my topic area. It's Bart's. Have we said enough at times yet how much we miss Bart? Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond. And this week it is Chit Chat Across the Nation to Steve Stanger of the Mac Attack Podcast. How are you doing today, Steve?
Doing pretty good. It is so cool to be here. Yeah, it's Chit Chat Across the Continent, I guess.
Continent. Yeah, that's what continent. We'll go with.
We'll just call it that. But no, it's great. Thanks for having me on.
It seems funny that you haven't been on before. And we're actually looking at each other in Skype video. And I realized, you know, we haven't actually ever met, even though we've been on the Mac Roundtable together. And you feel like family.
It's true. And you know, I have seen video of you. I mean, I catch you recording your show Sundays. You know, I've seen the video, of course, when the Roundtable gang has gotten together at Macworld or even Blogworld, I guess, a couple of years ago. So I know you. I know what you look like. But yeah, this is really the first time we're talking live face to face.
I feel like we finally met.
Yep.
Just no hugging. That's all there is to it.
And one of these years I'll make it out to California.
So you got to do it.
We'll be able to do that.
That's a good thing. All right. The reason I wanted to get you on the show is I actually use Flipboard on my Mac, on my iPad, just to look at your photos on Flickr. That is the main thing I'm looking for, is to see what you've posted, because you're everything from your digital SLR photos that, I mean, the Bronx Zoo photos you took were just spectacular. I mean, out of this world amazing. But down to the photos you take with your iPhone now, you've had little point-and-shoot cameras. You've taken gorgeous shots of they're just always interesting in the composition, everything about them. And it's been fun watching you as you got your first iPhone and your, shall we call it, addiction to camera applications.
See, I thought we were going to go right for that. This was going to be an intervention of my addiction to camera apps. Yeah, that's crazy.
And I'm Steve and I have a problem.
Oh, I know. But I'm finding out that not so much. I think I might actually have, from kind of asking around, I'm probably right up there with the number of apps I've purchased, but
it's just they're all photo apps.
Yeah. Yeah.
we all have 200, but 199 of yours are just photo apps.
Pretty
right?
much.
It's also been fun watching and listening to you and John F. Braun with your first iPhones, because it's sort of like after you have kids, it's fun to watch somebody else when they first have kids, you know, that reaction. Right. And it's almost like it's all new again to hear it through your eyes.
Right. It is. I mean, you know what it is? And it was funny because John and I, and we've even, not to go too far off the track here, you know, I'd even talked about waiting for the iPhone for years on the Mac Roundtable.
So
getting that and our excitement, but I could definitely see that. And I know other people, you know, all of you guys that have had iPhones too. And it's just, now I know what I was missing all that time.
Just to let you know, it's not boring. It's fun. It's not like, oh, I knew all that. It's fun to listen to you guys. It's all fresh. So how come you take such awesome photos? What did you learn? What do you know?
You see, it's funny. It all started, I mean, when I was a kid, I was into photography. I think my mom gave me my first, you know, point and shoot film. Well, we call them point and shoots now, but it was just a basic 35 millimeter film camera.
Actually, it was probably 110, wasn't it?
You know what? I don't think it – I think the 110 came later, believe it or not.
Oh, okay.
But it was one of those that you drop – well, I'm 42. I don't mind saying. Soon to be a year older. But, you know, so it was one of the ones that you just dropped the 35 millimeter in, and it was, you know, electronic enough that it would actually pull the film through. You didn't have to do it yourself. And you would just click away. I don't want to get the name wrong. It was one of the Kodak cameras, and it had the square flash cubes on the top like that. And that's how I got into photography, and it was one of those things that kind of just stuck with me through high school, into college, where I was even, you know, one of the photographers for both my junior high and high school newspaper. I mean, little things like that. And it was not one of those things I ever thought I would be more than a hobby. And You know, I was into computers then, and that's what I pursued into college and stuff like that. So photography as a career never entered my mind. So, but I did take it as electives. I took it as a, part of my fine arts minor when I was in college. And I think part of – I don't know. I think part of the whole thing with just the composition side of – always been into visual and graphic arts too for as long as I can remember. So I think that all ties into it. I think because I really can't draw very well or paint very well, I think that really kind of comes into play with, well, here's photography and I can express myself that way. And it, one thing that was really kind of weird about photography is I forgot how much I liked it. If that, I'm trying to figure out how that happened. And I mean, life happens. So probably between, I don't know, maybe 20, between 25 and 39 or 40. I mean, it's a big span of years. I mean, it's 15, 16, 17 years. I mean, I always had cameras, and I had a film camera that I had forever, a nice 35 millimeter SLR camera that I had gone back in college and would take it out. And when digital started becoming a little bit more affordable, I had the really poor, just horrible looking HP. I'm trying to remember the number, the name, the model number, but it was just a point and shoot HP camera, which was my first digital camera.
I think I remember that one. I think I had it too.
Yeah. I mean, what, I mean, if it, I don't even, I think it was 1.3
megapixels,
if that. But even then, you know, you look at the limitations and go, well, how can I be creative with this? How do you move beyond just doing, you know, snapshots? So,
well, but this is the crux of the question, because Steve, right. My mom gave me a camera when I was little. I had a Minolta X700 when I was about 25. I got that. I had that for, you know, 20 years. I took pictures everywhere. I carried that thing everywhere. I took pictures. I've got 80,000 digital photos, and I still take snapshots. You know,
right.
I it is very uncommon for me to look at a photo and go, "Whoa, you nailed that one."
I mean, really, see. You need to be to that point going, okay, how do I move beyond that? Because a lot of people don't ever reach that point, and that's fine. If people like what they're doing with their photos, but you have realized that you said, you know what, I'd like to take pictures that look like Steve, or where does that come from? And one thing that I found, like I said, I mean, for me, I've always been like into visual and graphic arts. And when I got back into photography, and we live in such a great age as far as information. I mean, I don't need to tell you that. Mm-hmm. When I got back into photography a couple of years ago and then got my digital SLR, which really kind of opened things up, there is such great information out there that moves beyond that really kind of takes you beyond the technical standpoint of your camera. You know, this is exposure. This is how you set this, which people need to know, because once that becomes automatic and you're able to somewhat be able to set things without having to dig through the menus. And that's where, for me, I know where the creativity kind of kicks in. But the point I was going to make is, you know, just to throw it out there, there's a great podcast called Within the Frame, which was based on this photographer and author, David Duchemin's book, Within the Frame. And I kind of discovered him on the internet, discovered this podcast on the internet right around the time when I was starting. And it's about the, both the book and the podcast are about the thought process behind photos.
Oh, good. Is it video or audio or?
Well, it's video. Okay. It's a video podcast. It's actually put out by Peach Pit, his publisher, and he's come out with a number of books since then. He actually started his own e-publishing, his own e-book company called Craft and Vision. But it's the philosophy behind taking a photo. It's everything, and again, it all has to deal with how you set up a shot, how you compose a shot. Now, understandably, if you're on vacation with your family, you're going to have snapshots. That just happens. But when you do have a chance to step back and go, well, okay, here's this really interesting looking tree. Do I put it in the center of the frame, which 95% of the people do, or do I put it off to the left or the right? And it adds what they call weight. Or visual weight, meaning it makes it that much more interesting to look at. Your eye, when you look at an image, whether it's video, you know, whether it's a moving image, whether it's a still image like a digital photography or even printed photography, your eye likes looking at things and likes moving around. It likes going from things that are in focus to not in focus. It likes going from well-lit to not well-lit. It likes going from maybe a part of your image that's just saturated with color, and then your eye actually needs to relax so it'll move to something that's not so saturated within the frame.
Oh.
So that all kind of ties into, you know, composing your shot. And going back kind of in a circle here, that's where, you know, a podcast in this case within the frame and the book within the frame kind of tie into that. And even his ebooks, which are like not only by him, but he's brought in some other photographers to write, are like $5 a pop. And I would have to say, out of anything, books that I've spent money on photography wise, those have probably been the absolute most informative. Those Craft and Vision books, ebooks, are just incredible. And now what they're doing with, of course, the success of the iPad, you can either buy the ebooks as PDFs or they have iPad apps. Basically, each book is an app and you're just able to kind of flip through it and stuff. But it's basically, here's a picture discussing what was done and why it was shot in such a way. Oh, exactly. Okay. And even kind of going from, this is the snapshot version, this is the artsy-fartsy version, if you want to put it that way.
Oh, exactly. So that's what I want to know.
So that's really interesting. Another book, another series that really helped, that was maybe less philosophical when it came to photography. And I'm sure your listeners have heard of Scott Kelby, because he's like one of the top selling Mac computer authors. But he's also
and he's
a photographer.
Funnier than hell too, though.
He is. He's a really nice guy. I've had a chance to meet him a couple of times.
Neat.
And he is. And the way he is in person, or the way you see him on stage or in videos and his podcast or his training, is the way he is in person. And he's just a very friendly person, very open. And what I would recommend there, if somebody's really kind of looking to take the step from snapshot, and this, no matter what camera you have, even if it's an iPhone camera or a point and shoot, all the way up to the most expensive DSL out there, is check out Scott Kelby's The Digital Photography book. But it's 3 volumes. And they're just great books, and they're available everywhere, and they're basic, but not so basic that if you have any kind of photography experience, they would bore you. It's the way he explains at the beginning of each book. It's as if you've won a contest and you get to go shoot photos with Scott Kelby. So each chapter is, here's a picture, and this is how I did it. And if, you know, and I mean, there's parts in there about wedding photography, and there's parts about portraiture, and there's parts in there about landscapes. And it's just, I like shooting everything. I mean, I'm not a big flower or bird person, but I will go and take pictures of birds and flowers if the opportunity presents itself.
You seem to like fences.
Fences? Well, you see, that's interesting that you mentioned fences and the beach too.
Fences on the beach are the really good
fences
ones.
Fences on the beach when I combine them together.
I think the first photo I ever saw of yours was it might even have been grayscale. Okay. It was a fence on the beach. It was like so compelling.
Right. Well, it's funny because what fences do, and that's another kind of trick with composition, is there's something called, and I mean, you've had great photographers on your show. I mean, recently you've spoken to Victor Caeo,
right.
And, you know, we were talking about Bark before, you know, and Robert, right. Actually, I've been trying to get Robert on my show too. That's my fault, not his, as far as scheduling. But I mean, even Bart, who, you know, I know came on and beat you up about why you should shoot in RAW and, you know, and stuff like that.
And I do now.
I know. But going back to the whole thing with the fence, one thing about the composition of photography, there's this rule of, now, one thing with photography is you hear all these quote unquote rules. Well, that's great, and that's good to learn, but you also learn when to break those rules, too, to make an interesting photo.
And I think Bart talked about that when he was talking about the rule of thirds, and then there was a picture of a woman on the beach where they took the sand, and it was only like 1/20th of the height of the picture, and she ended up looking like this weird giant, but it was like this coolest photo.
Right. Well, that goes into, you know, you have this whole series of things you can do to make for an interesting photo that all kind of goes through your head, or it does become second nature. But the thing with the fence is, one of the things with fences or roadways is something called leading lines. And that makes for an interesting photo where, you know, and I haven't found a great street to try this on yet, but I absolutely love photos where somebody has set up in the middle of a street, which isn't the safest thing to do, and they're down low, and you basically just follow, you know, the solid yellow line or the dotted white line up through the photo. That's a leading line.
Right.
You know, fences are very obvious leading lines. Again,
my daughter got a great photo like that. She ran out into the middle of the street in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a light rain, and so there was a reflection of the water on the street. Mm-hmm. And she was using a point and shoot camera, and she had the real tall buildings in the line in the background. She right. printed that for like $9 on, you know, as poster paper and mm-hmm. framed it. And people swear that she must have bought it somewhere. It's the coolest. And then she did it all in grayscale.
Wow.
See, and it's just
But you
beautiful.
See, that is somebody that knows naturally, well, that's an interesting shot.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a neat looking shot. Because a lot of people think, oh, the rain. Oh, no. You know what? Once the rain, if it's a light rain or rain stops, that's one of the best times to go shoot, especially if you're shooting on, you know, a cityscape, or you're shooting, you know, that it's going to show a lot of street, and especially if it's getting dark and the street lights are coming on and the ground, you know, the wet ground picks up the reflection.
Right.
So that's something that, again, going beyond a snapshot to that, is you start really seeing things differently. I mean, without sounding too deep here, you really do. You kind of so it
getting
it
existential there, Steve.
Exactly.
But I think there's some people have this innate in them. I mean, my daughter, from when she was little, we would go out with cameras at the same time, take pictures right. of the same thing, and I'd come back and I go, shoot, I'm just throwing mine away, because she just had an eye for it. But maybe it is something you can learn.
I think there's of course, you know, a ton of paid sources out there, but that. More of that paid training, and it's not bad, is more the nuts and bolts of Photoshop, Aperture, Lightroom, that kind right. of thing. There are some within some of the training when they do talk about photography, that they do talk about composition and stuff like that. But that's really where you go between where you kind of separate out, again, the snapshots. And even snapshots can be somewhat creative too. Another example of kind of free stuff that's out there, and somebody who I discovered early on when I kind of got back into photography is Rick Salmon. Is another. It's funny. He's another regional photographer. He actually is up in New York State, and I've met a couple of times. He has training all over the place. If you do a YouTube search for Rick Salmon, he's one of these guys that's very big on giving back to the community and sharing.
Cool.
He's written books too and stuff like that. So of course it's all. You know, it goes around. I mean, it's one of those things. He does use it for promotion. He's one of these photographers that says once you've seen one of his seminars, met him live, whatever, you're kind of a student of his for life. And he'll sit there and answer. It might take him a couple of days. He'll answer emails. I had a conversation with him on Twitter a couple of days ago, just kind of going back and forth. He had posted something and I kind of responded to it and he asked me a question back. He's very much out there.
Engaged.
Engaged.
Cool.
Exactly. Engaged with his audience. But has a ton of this great kind of free stuff that's out there.
Yeah, that's one of those things that's unintuitive, I think, in old industry, is that because he gives it away for free, he's generating more and more interest in the stuff that he does do. And
exactly.
The giving it back stuff totally works. So I should probably get us on to topic by now. That was I did want to know that stuff, and this has been fantastic.
Okay.
It's time for the intervention portion of our show now, Steve. You've had an iPhone for, what, a couple of months, and how many iPhone apps have you bought that are purely photography?
25. They don't all live on the iPhone and the iPad currently. Some make an appearance and go away. You know,
so you're testing them, right? I mean, it's for scientific exploration, really.
Yeah. And reviewing them, and I'm paying every penny, dollar, you know, whatever.
$1 at a time.
Dollar, $4 at a time.
Don't ever go back and look and see how much you've spent. It's not a good thing.
Yeah, but I did, though. When I was putting – but you know, when you asked me to do this, I had to go back and look, and I'm just like, all right, let me see. And I went back to iTunes, and I'm going through, and it's not horrible. It's probably only about – $50, believe it or not.
If you think about it, we used to pay $50 for an application on the Mac and think that was nothing.
Right. And not only that, I mean, I look at it too as, again, being into photography and my digital darkroom, I use Photoshop. You have filters in Photoshop that on the low end are, you know, 125 going all the way up to the $300-$400 range. And Photoshop itself, I'm not even going to get into what that costs.
$650.
Yeah,
I looked it up today.
I mean, it's ridiculous. Oh, you looked it up. It's ridiculous. And you don't necessarily even need – that's something I want to say, too. You don't even need Photoshop. You can use Photoshop Express?
Photoshop Elements?
Elements, yes.
But there's also – there's Pixelmator. There's Acorn. Yes. There's a lot of good options out there now. I do most of my stuff in Aperture, where I take my snapshots and then I crop them till they look like good photos. Sometimes you don't have to be good at taking photos. You just get good at cropping and enhancing.
But you know what? That's part of it, too. But as much as you can do – this is something you need to keep telling yourself. As much as you can do in camera, your images – it takes – it's that much less work you have to do in front of your computer. Right. So if you compose the shot the way you want, and when you come back – you might have to crop a little bit as opposed to cropping and then getting the person right where you want. It also, you know, of course, you're zooming in. When you're cropping, you're zooming in on a photo, so the quality might not be as good as it was originally.
Right.
But again, all that stuff is there.
Let's start getting into your apps. So you've listed all 25 of them.
We're not going to go through all of them. I definitely won't. But just
to kind of put that are interesting to you.
I will. Just to kind of put it out there, my workflow right – and it's funny to say workflow with a camera phone because I never thought I would be that into the – I figured the camera would be for snapshots and go, oh, that's interesting. I'll come back here, take a quick picture so I know the location, and then I could come back with my DSLR. But even before I got it – and I mean I've seen what other people have done with the iPhone, and it's pretty amazing even before getting my Verizon phone. The thing is I have this workflow now. So basically I shoot – all my photos with a program called – an application called Camera Plus, the plus symbol. Due to the fact that not only allows you to focus like all the apps do, but if you tap with two fingers, it allows you to not only focus but also set the exposure. So you'll have your little focus square and then a circle for the exposure where you can move around. And if you need the picture lighter, you move the exposure to a darker area and it makes that lighter.
Oh, okay.
You know, and then what I do is there's another app. So I
that's a whole dollar, though.
It's a whopping dollar. It's scary, right? It's a dollar, and it's got a neat set of filters you can apply. And if you just want one app, get that app. And most people would probably be more than happy with it. The other part of that process is another application called Picture Show, and it's just due to the fact that it actually does have some features. It has a ton of filters and frames and overlays as far as like scratch looking images and stuff. I like the interface on that a little bit better just due to the fact that it does give you sliders. It gives you a little bit more finite control than Camera Plus does. But again, if you can only choose one of two apps, I would say Camera Plus and or Picture Show, which is a whopping $2.
That's getting kind of rich. It's there.
And then really, I know. And then what's part of the workflow now is once I discovered Instagram, which is actually a free application that allows you to – it's basically the Twitter of photo apps. It allows you to share photos.
But I have to say, and I may offend every single person listening, but I'm tired of seeing every photo that's posted on my Twitter feed look like it's old.
Right.
That's over. I'm done with that. Can people stop doing that? It was cute for a few minutes.
I'm guilty of that myself because I'm still trying to figure out, speaking of the psychology behind photography, I'm trying to figure out, we have not only DSLRs, we have these digital cameras, whether it's in an iPhone or an Android or anything else that's out there. I mean, 5 megapixels, 8 megapixel cameras. What is the reasoning that we like that old retro look? And I don't have an answer for that. I'm kind of putting that out there. But you're right. Every photo will either apply a grunge effect. And it's not over yet. I mean, I have apps on here that it's specifically just to do grunge or make it look like it was shot with a very specific type of old style camera. And I mean, the effects are amazing, and I'm not sure why I'm drawn to that. It's really funny, but I don't know why. Here it is. I mean, gorgeous. I mean, I was out on a sunny day. There were clouds in the sky. It looked great. Took the shot. I'm like, awesome, beautiful. I couldn't post it that way. I turned around and ran it through a filter, made it look like it was an old photo. To me, it was very interesting. But I don't know why. I don't know why it's kind of like, ooh, this is a great photo. Share it this way.
I do get the old photo thing. Right. Mineology just went through and scanned in a bunch of his childhood photos and posted them on Facebook. And you know, I've met Mineology a couple of times, great guy and everything. But it's not like we're real close friends. But I sat on Facebook for 35 minutes looking at these old photos. To me, I think it's stuff like the old cars or the bicycle where you're going, I had that bicycle, you know, that kind of thing. Right. Just looking at regular pictures, looking old. I don't know. I'm done.
I know. But, I know. And I'm trying to get away from that or at least do something a little bit different. I mean, I think that
it could be old different maybe, but they seem to all look the same to me after a while. Well,
I think what happens there too is if somebody is using the app Instagram, you can use Instagram to take pictures and then they give you, I think, 8 different filters you can apply. Or you don't have to apply any of them, but it gives you specifically 8 filters. So if people are only shooting Instagram photos within Instagram – that's part of the problem is that, of course, you're going to see that kind of repetition.
So you can start with another photo app and then post it through Instagram? Oh,
basically,
okay.
My workflow, if I shoot it with one, I save it back to my
photo library.
You know, my photo library on the iPhone.
Right.
Then open it in another app, do whatever I want to do with it, save it back. So I actually have – there might be – 4 or 5 copies of the same photo, and I can actually go back and look at the progression of what mess, I guess you could say, I've made of a photo, or if I like it, pat myself on the back. But one thing I have to say, because I know Instagram or any kind of sharing site, I mean, even Flickr can be that way too, is it's a lot of – it's not so – at least for me, it's not so much of, ooh, look at me kind of thing. I have – just like we have through being part of this Mac community and podcasting, I've made a lot of great friends. Whether it's people that listen to our shows, whether it's fellow podcasters, I feel the kind of the same way with the photography side of my life too, is that I've met photographers, even if it's not a face-to-face kind of meeting, that I've met these people and have had discussions with these people, and it's very inspirational.
Mm.
Whether they're a pro photographer, whether they're just starting out, whether the only thing they have is a point and shoot and they're doing the best they can with it. It's, you know, going out and being creative, and it's going out and sharing. And that, to me, that's what I think this is about. Whether you're shooting with a digital SLR or any kind of point and shoot, or even your iPhone camera, that have fun with it. Don't think it's a limit, or don't think people are going to point and laugh at you because you're shooting and posting those photos. I mean, to me, it's such a neat learning tool. And it's funny, I had even cut and pasted this quote from, and he's actually a fairly popular modern photographer, I would say, because here's a guy that has tens of thousands of dollars worth of camera equipment, and he's a portrait photographer, and he shoots rock bands. His name's Zach Arias, and he's another one who gives a lot back to the community, his online community. But his quote was, leading lines, repetitive shape and form, rule of thirds. My iPhone is a composition study tool. Where I thought that was great. I just thought I wanted to save that quote. I actually cut and pasted it to my desktop too, just because it's like, here's somebody that gets it. I've seen other photographers, not necessarily pro photographers or working photographers, but photographers that, like myself, it's more than just a hobby. I don't want to say passion, because passion is so over. It's a passion, but it's such an overused word. I hate using it. But it's part of you. And to me, why not use whatever you have? I mean, there's another photographer, and Chase Jarvis, who his big thing was, the best camera you have is the one you have with you. And he even wrote a book. Right. And he wrote a book about that. He has a whole web. But he's another one that realized the iPhone – or even any decent camera phone, you know, it's something you have with you, and there's no reason why you can't be creative with it. There's no reason why you should look at it any differently than any other camera you might have.
And Robert Lachman is very much along that philosophy, and some of the photos that he takes on his lunchtime walks in downtown LA will just blow your socks off, you know.
And that's it. And there's somebody that's worked almost 40 years, I think it is.
I think so.
As yeah.
And you know, he has cameras with giant lenses the length of your arm, you know, that he carries in the trunk of his car. Well, I won't tell you what his car looks like so you don't steal them. But, you know, it's not like he's not familiar with the best equipment that exists today. And yet he just loves using his favorite app is Hipstamatic.
Yes. Yep. That's another one that's great. Now, Hipstamatic's interesting because unlike the other apps I mentioned that you can actually take photos in other apps and then import them, Hipstamatic doesn't allow you to do that. Your photos start in Hipstamatic, and then you can save them out somewhere else. Hipstamatic's interesting because it is almost like carrying a real camera. You can actually change film types, lenses.
Yeah.
And that's the app that got a little expensive for me because that app starts out as $1.99.
Right.
And by the end, by the time I finished buying everything, I think it was about a $10 app. But that's not even a complaint. Being able to sit there and play around, it was so interesting. Playing around with the quality of pictures you get from that app are unbelievable. However they figured it out, I mean, their developers were pretty incredible. I mean, yeah, there might be three different rolls of black and white film you can use. And you literally look like you're just flipping through different rolls
of
film.
Right.
They each, just like real physical film, they each have their own properties. They each respond differently. And then, of course, you've got 12 different lenses you can try. And
that's all within one type of camera.
And that's all within that Hipstamatic application camera. And
that actually confused me. I stopped using it because I couldn't figure out what I was doing because I had too many variables to mess with.
But that's it. And it's not to me, it's about keeping it simple when it comes to the iPhone, even though having 25 apps, you say, well, how can that be? But it's the 25 apps and having a choice of going, okay, well, I'm going to take the picture with this app, but I like the filter or the effect that I get from this other app.
Right.
You know, and some of the apps I have too aren't all necessarily specific for taking photos. You know, I even have, I put in the notes, but I actually have two different photography folders on my iDevices. One is for photography and the other one is photo utility. So for example, like within there, there's Photo to Mac, which is a great app that lets you just transfer, you know, photos from your iPhone or your iPod Touch or your iPad from your device over to your Mac over Wi-Fi.
Oh, so you don't have to sync?
Yes.
I need that.
Right. And Photo to Mac. And what's cool about it is it uses file sharing. So I set up a folder on my desktop called, I think it's just iPhone Photos or something like that, shared it using your Mac OS X, you know, sharing.
Right.
You sign in from your, you know, from your iPhone. It looks for anything that's being shared. Once you log in, it'll see all of your shared folders. You just tell it, nope, go to this folder, and it's really quick and it's really fast. So
we're too lazy to sync our phones, but it just somehow it's like
But it is, but it's a pain because you know what happens when I sync my phone? It's not only syncing over my photos; it is syncing over any apps I might have purchased. It's doing backups. It's doing updates. Listen,
I'm launching iTunes. It's launching Aperture.
Exactly.
It's doing all this other stuff.
Exactly. It's like this three-ring circus going on. And then another app that I got was this one called Transfer, which allows you – because my big thing was, okay, I've got my iPad. And it makes me nuts when people say with the iPad still that it's a consumption device. I mean, I use it for so much more than I use it a lot for consumption between reading and watching.
I think you could argue that.
I mean, I write on it. I know. I think anybody can, but especially at this point. But I'll take, you know, so this app Transfer allows me to transfer either video or pictures from iDevice to iDevice. If you're on a network, that's great, but it'll also do it through Bluetooth.
Oh. So can you go from an iPhone to an iPad over Bluetooth?
Yes. Yes.
And that's,
through this app.
That's
this
again with Photo to Mac.
No, this is actually this other app called Transfer.
Oh, I missed.
Right.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Do you know why I was distracted? I was looking at pictures of fences on beaches on your Flickr stream here. I was like, Steve's still talking.
Yes. No, just to be clear, yeah, Photo to Mac does exactly what the name implies. It goes from either of your any of iDevice just to your Mac. Mm-hmm. To anything that's shared on any folder that's shared on your Mac.
Right.
Transfer allows you to go from iDevice.
Okay. So that's kind of neat.
So it's actually that's kind of neat. It also lets you do this is again this application Transfer. It does allow you to go from your iDevice to your Mac, but to me that interface is a little bit more clunky than just the Photo to Mac interface.
Okay. So if you had to buy one, you'd be on the photo to the Mac side.
Yeah. Yeah. Because for me, it was more important to go from my iPhone to my iPad and actually work on photos on a larger screen.
Yeah. And I can kind of see that because it's not that much easier to edit photos on an iPad than it is on an iPhone versus going iPhone to Mac.
Right. 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 And again, sometimes I don't want to be that involved with a photo, if that makes sense. I'd rather dump it onto my iPad, do what I want to do with it, and then, you know, either email it so it's auto-posted somewhere or share it with Instagram. And it looks the same. I mean, the resolution hasn't changed. You know, it's not resized any different as I pop it.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're still getting that iPhone look. You're still, you know, and I'm still using pretty much iPhone apps. But, I mean, those are some really basic ones. I mean, I went overboard because, I mean, for example, there's another one called Incredibooth. I love photo booths. You remember those old, like you would arcades? I mean, we probably remember them more than people now because they're not around, but you'd put a dollar, or it wasn't even a dollar back then, but I mean, that makes me sound ancient saying that, but you know, whatever it was. So you put the money in the machine, you sit in, and it gives you a strip of like three or four photos, and they were either black and white or, well, all Incredibooth does is take those kind of photos, and it uses the front-facing camera. So if it's you, I mean, I love, you know, grabbing somebody, if I'm sitting next to somebody, grabbing them, holding the phone up, taking it, and it's this whole series of pictures. And it's such a neat interface, too. It looks like one of those old photo booths.
I got to tell my sister-in-law and her daughter started taking pictures in photo booth every year. A photo booth. And so they've got them all up on the refrigerator as she's, you know, a little baby on up.
Wow.
And so I bet her daughter would love to have that on her iPhone. That
would be, and it's great.
Really,
and listen, then you just pay the dollar for it, and you never have to worry about finding a photo booth again. I mean, a lot of the things there were apps I had gotten early on that specifically dealt with black and white photography and processing photos to black and white. But there was so much crossover in some of the later apps I purchased, so those were kind of shifted, you know, off the iDevices, you know, off the iPhone and the iPad. So that's why there were, like, you know, that many, you know, applications.
You're trying to justify it. I can tell.
You know what I am? See, I'm kind of doing the treading. That's it. You know, but there.
Well, I like what you've done is you've really narrowed it down for us what the top gems are. Now, have you covered this on your show? Which ones you think are the top dog ones, or is this?
This is the first time, really. I really haven't gone into it. And it's funny because, you know, you had asked me and I started kind of putting my notes together, just, you know, making sure I didn't sound like a totally rambling idiot.
Just a partially rambling idiot.
Just a partially rambling idiot because, you know, listen, you're like me. You can ask, you know, we geek out about so many different things. You want to talk about Macs? You could ask somebody, ask you about a Mac, and I'm sure, just like myself, we could go on forever. You could ask me about photography. I can just go on. I need these points just to keep myself in track. But I haven't. But it's funny that you bring that up. I really haven't done that. And maybe I will in, you know, a month or two kind of down the line. You know, and even maybe even bring somebody else in or bring another photographer in just to kind of bounce these ideas off of.
And that could be part of what you do with Robert, because I know he's really gotten into it on the on the iPhone, too. Well, you know what? I hate to cut us off because you still have 22 applications we haven't talked about
here. Listen, that's fine.
Steve does have links to every single app he's got on his phone, and he's got a little description of what it's for. And so you can try out the ones. I am absolutely going to pick up Photo Mac to Mac, and I'm going to think about Transfer. And I actually didn't have Camera Plus yet, even though I'd heard about it. So I can see I've lost – luckily, I've only lost about $5 with you here.
That's good.
You know, when I had Shai Yamini on the show talk about plugins, he was up to $1,100 by the end of the first steps episode. So luckily I don't do video or audio stuff, or it would have cost me even more, you know. But I'm sure there's some money to be drained there. Well, Steve, this has been fantastic. Why don't you tell people where they can find you? And I'm also going to put a link in the show notes to your Flickr page.
Thank you. Well, actually, the best place, I finally got smart. Like many of my fellow podcasters that have many different interests, I finally have
a
one-stop shop.
What'd you say, Chuck?
Well, exactly. I wasn't going to say names, but exactly. That's what I was thinking of. if you go to about.me/S Stanger, S-S-T-A-N-G-E-R, You can see my about.me page, which links to everything. My online gallery, my Flickr, my Twitter, which is actually that might even be an easier way to kind of discover me on Twitter, is at TMA Steve.
Great.
And of course, host the Mac Attack.
Oh, right. And by the way, I do a podcast called The Mac Attack.
And the podcast is in there somewhere, too.
Oh, good, good. And I love following you on Twitter because that's how come I know that you've got new photos up, and that's how come I end up over on Flipboard, and that's how come I lose another 20, 30 minutes of my life looking at your photos. Well, Steve, I really appreciate you coming on the show. This is fantastic. We have to do this again. This is way too much fun.
Love to.
All right. Thanks,
bye-bye.
Steve. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Steve and I actually did that recording 2 weeks ago, but I saved until this weekend so that I could cheat and take most of the weekend off to visit family. I love talking to Steve. It was fantastic. He's got such an easy, unassuming air about him. You know, he doesn't put anybody else down because they're not great at photography yet. He's just so encouraging. That makes him really easy to learn from. I can't wait to get into watching some of the video resources he recommended. The links are all in the show notes. Tons and tons and tons of links, which is great. Something fun to look forward to. But I'm afraid that's going to wind us up for this week. Many thanks to our sponsors for helping to pay the bills. We've got Smile, Screen Steps, and of course, the intergalactically famous Honda Bob. Don't forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions by emailing them to me at allison@podfeet.com. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. And if you want to join the fun of the live show, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Or you can go over to the same site and follow the links to get over to watch the recorded live show. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.